Alec. My name is Roy.
Hi,
and by the grace of God, I haven't had a drink today, for which I'm grateful. You know, I was just looking at the steps 4 through 6, and doing 6 without 7 is trying to have a cheeseburger without cheese. So, you know, with your permission, I'm going to kind of slide into 7 a little bit. So I had my last drink on the 22nd of April, 1990. So God willing and me cooperating, April will be 22 years that I have been alcohol and various other substance free. Just want to quickly, where are the steps gone? There they are. Just want to quickly summarize on 1, 2, and 3. And I'm really glad that some people got some big books today. In 1990, when I got sober in India, we had maybe about 100 big books in the whole country. So if you wanted to read the big book, you came an hour early for the meeting. You bribed the secretary by setting up the whole meeting, washing the ashtrays, and then he let you read the big book, and he kept his eye on you, make sure you weren't tearing pages out and stuff like that. Or at least he was making sure I wasn't tearing pages out. He didn't scrutinize other people so carefully. And when I was about a year sober, my sister sent me my own copy of the big book from America. And my aunt sent me some tapes with these two guys who were sharing their experience on how to do the steps. And I started listening to them and reading the big book, and it completely changed the way I was living a sober life. And I use that experience a lot when I'm working with people and I'm looking at step 1, 2, and 3. I did not know I was powerless over alcohol. And the first thing I had to learn was that alcoholism was an illness. And in the doctor's opinion of that big book on page Roman numeral 26 or 27, he makes a couple of really important conclusions, the doctor's opinion. One was that if I was an alcoholic, I was abnormal. My drinking was abnormal. I drank differently from other people. I knew that and everyone knew that. It was nice to see a doctor say that in print. The other thing he said was that the nature of the abnormality was a craving. My body would crave more. I said, oh, that explains why I would say 2 drinks before dinner, darling, and keep drinking. It's a physical craving. It's like my sister with strawberries or, you know, my grandmother with shrimp. And neither of them have to sit in meetings of Strawberry Eaters or Shrimp Eaters Anonymous. They just don't do it. The second thing the doctor said was, it's not only physical in a craving, but it's also mental. And there's something wrong with my mind, because my mind says, on page 23, there's got to be somehow, some way, some possible way that I can control and enjoy my alcohol use. And I said, yeah. I would wake up really badly hungover, broke, sick, maybe not free, and would say, there's got to be some way I can have as much fun as I did last night without getting into this kind of trouble. So I could definitely identify with the physical and mental. How was I going to find out whether I was actually one of you or not? And on page 44, they gave me 2 simple questions. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. I honestly wanted to. For, you know, at least 300 Monday mornings after coming into AA. And, or if while drinking you have little control over the amount you take. And I answered yes to both. Because then you're probably alcoholic. I didn't want to hear that, so they said there's a very easy way to find out. You go to page 31 and it tells you to step over to the nearest bar room and try some control drinking. It says try it more than once. It won't take you long to find out if you're an alcoholic or not. And if you don't like that method, then it says, well, just quit. I tried, that failed. They said, okay, quit for 1 year. 1 year? You got to be joking. People were talking about 90 days in meetings. I wasn't even getting to 30 days. So the powerless bit was pretty easy for me to accept. And when they talked about my life being unmanageable, there's some really great questions on page 52 of the big book, you know. Was I a prey to misery and depression? Yeah. Could I make a living? No. Was I having trouble with personal relationships? Yes. I was single again and living with my grandmother. And could I control my thinking? No. My mind still said, I can do this. I can drink and control. So that was okay for me with step 1. When it came to step 2 and a power greater than myself, as I said last week, there's no shortage of higher powers in India. But for me, it wasn't, you know. But I wasn't having that. So they asked me on page 46 of the big book, and don't take my word for it, just check it. I'm glad you picked it up. You know, it says on page 46, was I willing to believe in a power greater than myself? Any power, whatever the heck it was. Is gravity a greater power than you? Yes, okay, try gravity, you know. And my own concept, it said on page 47, however inadequate, was sufficient. Well, that I could do. And as I said last week, my sponsor helped me form my own concept by writing down the good qualities of my friends. And that was good enough for me. So for me, step two was only about willingness. And I could take that too. And then we came to step three. And on step three, they said very clearly, selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of Roy's problems. I don't know why. I thought it was everybody else, but it wasn't. It was me, and driven by 100 forms of fear and self-seeking and self-delusion, you know, I would step on the toes of people. And they would usually kick my butt. Then I'd get resentful. Then I'd plan revenge. But my revenge planning was usually with a bottle in hand. You know, and the revenge would go by the wayside, and then I'd get into more trouble, and then they'd, you know, kick my butt again, and I'd get more resentful, and it was always their fault. So it said in step three, you haven't really lived your life very successfully so far. I had to reluctantly agree. 28 years old, unemployed, broke, single, living with grandmother. Yeah, I have to. And since I had found this concept of a power greater than myself, what it asked me to do was make this decision or a choice to turn my thinking and my actions over to this power. How exactly does the willing person turn his will and life over to God? I didn't know. What do? You kneel? Do you sit on a bed of nails, make a parcel, throw things in the ocean? This was one of the most perplexing questions for me in the 6 years of relapse from 1984 to 1990. How do you do it? Thank God for America's greatest export. Because the big book says, and you don't have it in that little one, it's on page 420. Yeah, you have to buy the big one. There's an easier way. Get a female sponsor, because in that big book they are told to give you a copy of this book. But it said on page 420 of the big book that I never just sit still and do nothing while waiting for God to tell me what to do. Instead, I do what is in front of me that must be done. And however that turns out, that's God's will. Oh, I'm broke, I'm unemployed, I'm single. Okay, start sending out resumes. Start going for interviews. Start, you know, asking people to go out with you on dates and then tell them that they're going to have to pay for it. And you will very quickly find out what is God's will for you. So that for me was step one, two, and three. For the new people here, if it's your first time or if you're new, it's really a simple process. You know, doesn't require a great deal of brain application. Just here's my life. Here's the conclusion. It sucks. Anything's better than the way I lived. So my first sponsor, as I shared last week, took me through step one, two, and three in the first 10 minutes that he met me. And I had to do my fourth step twice. I did it formally twice. The first time was the way my sponsor took me through it. The second time was after I got my own big book and I listened to these tapes, and then I tried to do it the way the big book outlined it. And I'll share both those experiences. So, Derek, Miriam said you have to give me one flyer. I can't remember which. You have to excuse my ADD. It just pops in there sometimes. So here I was, maybe about 17, 18, 20 hours sober. I had my last drink, maybe about 11, 11:30 at night. And then the next evening after this meeting, this guy took me through step one, two, and three. And he said, okay, now that your third step, you said you will do my third step. Here was his third step question. Will you do anything I tell you to do? I said, yes. He said, great, you've taken step three. And then we crossed the street, and since I was broke, he bought me a 200-page marble-lined notebook. And on the first page he wrote, "I am a liar." You know, we argued about that for a week because I thought I was not a liar. And he said, "Okay, you start your fourth step." I said, "What do I do?" So he said, "You got to write the story of your life." Do I recommend that? No. It was a very painful process for me. Did I get a lot out of it? Not really much, to tell you the truth, because whatever I wrote down was really stuff that I already knew about myself. Whatever I wrote down was stuff I knew. There were no hidden nuggets or gems that came out of it. But I said, "How do I do that?" And he said, "What's the first thing you remember?" And the first thing I remembered was a situation in kindergarten where it was my birthday and I was sick. So I wanted to go to school and have everyone sing happy birthday. Kindergarten. And my parents, being parents, want me to stay home and get well. First resentment. So anyway, defiance. I had my way. They took me to school. And I remembered that. So I started from there. I thought, I had no idea what AA was. I had no idea what this was. I'm writing, I'm rereading. Oh, this doesn't sound good. I went to one of the finest schools in India. And so I kept going back, ripping out pages, doing rewrites, correcting punctuation. I'm having nightmares of, you know, of Mr. Ribello and Miss DeMello, my English high school teachers, correcting this thing. And I wasn't rushing to complete this fourth step. So it took me about April, May, June, July. It took me about 3 months. You know, I used every excuse to not write. And then the rewriting, you know, would slow down the process. But I eventually got up to about 186 pages. You know, I wish I had kept it. I could have made so much money on the internet. However, that was really my fourth step. Just wrote down everything I could remember about my life. And my first sponsor, bless him, when I was done, he didn't have a phone. He still doesn't have a phone. So I had to take 2 buses to get to his house. I said, "Okay, I'm done." So we made an appointment. He came over to my apartment and he sat down. And then this was a really grueling process because he's sitting on the other side of the room and he has my fourth step in his hand with a paper and a pen, and he's going through this book making faces and sounds. Here's how it went. Oh my God. And then he's writing on this other piece of paper. Very disconcerting. I had no idea what was happening. So this went on for a couple of hours. The guy finally finished. And then he gave me this piece of paper and he said, "You've completed your fifth step. I've read everything that you've written over here." He said, "There's one more piece. Is there anything else you need to tell me? Because the fifth step requires that I be completely honest with one person." So, and he said, "You don't have to be honest with me. You can find somebody else and do it, a psychologist or a priest or your best friend or anything else?" I said, "No." He said, "What about all that weird animal sex and all those things you don't tell anyone?" I said, no, none of that stuff." So what about the criminal activity? And I told him about the criminal activity. And he said, "You're done." I said, "Great. The fifth step's over. That's it. I had to write all this stuff for you to tell me I'm done." And then he gives me this page that he'd been scribbling on. And on one side was a list of defects of character that he had picked out of my story. And on the other side was a list of amends that he had picked out, which I had to do. So I'd finished my fourth step in about 3 months. I finished my fifth step in one afternoon. He gave me this piece of paper with my list of defects on it. And he said, "Okay, now we're going to burn your fourth step." That's why I said I wish I'd kept it. And we went over to my barbecue pit and burnt the book. And he said, "There goes the old Roy, but if you don't practice the rest of the program, it's going to come back and you'll be drinking again." And I said, "What do I have to do?" Now at this time, remember, I still did not have a belief in a power greater than myself. I still had only a willingness. I was still beginning. Every morning saying, "If there is a God, please keep me sober." And every night I was saying, "If there was a God, thank you." And I'm sorry, I have to slide into step 7 over here. But he said, "Now I'm going to teach you a new prayer." And now you add to your prayer every morning, you say, if there is a God, please keep me sober and please take away these defects of character. So what the heck does God have to do with defects of character? He said, Roy, in your case, we'll make an exception. Your entire character is defective. And so what you're going to have to do is, you as an alcoholic, and you know, sharing his own experience, he's saying, you operate off defects of character. You're operating off laziness and lust and anger and gluttony and sloth and all. I mean, some guy I was working with found a list of 266 defects of character on the internet. Thank God there was no internet in 1990, because he only had like 18 or 19 defects from some Hazelden list that I had to work off. And he said, look, we operate off these defects, you know, and people don't like them. We cause trouble for other people. Then we start resenting the trouble they're causing us. Then we plan revenge. Then we don't fulfill the revenge. They hurt us some more. We get some angry some more. And then we relapse. I said, that's right. He said, and you unfortunately don't have the power to correct that. So you better hope that there's something that'll do this. He said, now you go out and start doing amends. So that was the first time I did step 4, 5, 6, and 7. I wrote the story. He read it. He gave me my defects and taught me to say this prayer. Fast forward to about a year later, I had my 1 year, my sister sent me this book, and I started listening to these two guys sharing this experience. And it sounded completely different from anything I had heard in AA so far, in India. Maybe it was different in other places, but it was very refreshing, you know. And I said, let me see if I can do the fourth step the way it's outlined here. And at the end of step 3, they said, okay, now that you've done step 3, they said, next, we launched out on a course of action. Now, next does not mean next month, or it would have said next month. It does not mean next year, or it would have said next year. Next means right now. Oh, you just finished your third step? Great. Next, you start on a course of action, which many of us had never attempted. And then the warning. They said, though our decision in step 3 to have God run our lives was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by an effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Blocking us from what? From God. What are these things? The defects. I don't know what the defects are. That's why you need to do the fourth, because they're going to come out. I said, oh, okay, let me try that. What do I have to do? Simple instructions. We make a list of people, institutions, and principles with whom we are angry. Wow, this is like ice cream. I can do this in 10 minutes. You know, start with family, then radiate out to everybody else my life has touched. And doing this fourth step 1 year sober, I was shocked to find that I resented almost 73 or 74 people and institutions and principles. And this was all like virgin territory for me. So, wow, I had no idea. You know? Second instruction, we asked ourselves why we were angry. More ice cream. Put on the butterscotch on top of the ice cream. He did this, she said that, they did the other. Cool. And then they said, very simple. Alcoholics have these resentments because five areas of their life are affected. Our self-esteem, what you did makes me feel like crap. You know, my ambitions, what you did interfered with what I want to be or who I want to be in life. My personal relations, my sex relations, and my security. And the big book is talking about money when they're talking about security. And then just to confuse us, they went down the list and they added two more things that weren't in the original instructions. They talked about pride, and then they talked about fear. I said, this is pretty easy. I'm afraid of Mr. X. Why? Because he'll find out I'm sleeping with his wife. In fact, this is hypothetical. So let me give you an honest example. I'm angry at the priest who molested me when I was 16 years old. So that's your column 1 and 2. Why? It did affect my self-esteem. It did not affect my money or my security. It did affect my ambitions. It did affect my personal relationships with him, with other members of my family who didn't know and were still friendly with this guy. And it did affect my sex relations for a while until I saw a professional and got my head straightened out. And I said, wow, I had no idea. Big book says, you know, and 73 or 74 names, those things over and over again. What do I do with this? They said, well, if you want to live, I did want to live. They said, Roy, you have to be free of this anger. And the only way you're going to be free of this anger is to pray for the SOB who did whatever they did to you. And that was very hard. And that's where a loving sponsor came in, because they shared their experience with me. What do I have to ask for? God, give this person everything that I want for my life. Good health, long life, sobriety, peace of mind, you know, fat wallet, skinny body, and not the other way around like it usually turns out. And I had to say this prayer, whether I meant it or not. And I did that. So now what's next? Now I look for my part. We looked at what we did. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked at our own part. What did I do? Well, I had cut classes which that guy was teaching. And what I did has nothing to do with the incident which was in the first part of my fourth step. It's what did I ever do to the people on that list. I had lied to him, I had cut classes, I had helped other people cheat in school, and so on and so forth. And where had those actions been selfish or dishonest or self-centered or full of fear? And I could see that. And right there I got my list of defects while doing this fourth step through the big book. And then it said, how could we straighten out the past? They were not asking us to straighten it out in step four, but they asked how. How could I? And in this particular case, I had to change my character. I did not owe the guy an apology. Thank God for the big book. Because on page 130, I said, what if I'm the victim of sexual abuse? On page 133, it says that this world, that God has abundantly blessed this world with many fine doctors, psychologists, and practitioners of various kinds, and do not hesitate to take your problems to such people. And I did. And they helped me. And I may owe an apology to somebody's sponsor over here, because I know I made a rude comment last week after the microphone was off, where I said a sponsor would really stick his nose in helping someone get sober and not be dispensing medical advice. And so whoever was offended last week, I apologize. But that was the first part of my fourth step. Whom was I pissed off at? What was my role in anything in their life? What are the defects? How do I straighten it out? Now, what about fear? That was simple. Four questions in the big book. What am I afraid of? I'm afraid of the boogeyman. Why am I afraid? He's gonna get me. Did self-reliance fail me? Yeah, I'd whistle really loudly walking past the dark alley so that the boogeyman wouldn't get me. But the next day, the fear was back. Now, boogeyman can be whatever you want. The police, the crack dealer, the IRS, the whatever the heck you want the boogeyman to be. Did self-confidence make it worse? Yeah, I learned to drink. I wasn't afraid of the boogeyman. I didn't have to whistle and run. I could thumb my nose at him while I walked past. But the next morning, the fear was back. Self-reliance failed me. Self-confidence made it worse. And the big book said, you know what? Perhaps there's a better way. We're now on the basis of trusting and relying upon God. Why? Because we just did the third step, remember? 10 minutes ago we did the third step, and next we're doing this. Wow. What do? I ask God to remove my fears and direct my attention to what He would have me be. Result? At once we commence to outgrow fears. Have I been in situations which have been fearful since I got sober? Absolutely. I almost got evicted. I almost went into foreclosure, I've almost lost my job, I've lost jobs, I've been dumped, I've been robbed. Lots of fear. God, direct my attention on what you would have me be. And He's come to the rescue. The third part of the fourth step for me was sexual conduct. They're not asking about a list of nasty, filthy things that I may or may not have done to a whole bunch of people. They're asking about my conduct. Where was I selfish? Where was I demanding? Where was I withholding? Hey, that's pretty simple. You know, did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy or bitterness or suspicion? What could I have done instead? What would I like it to be ideally? At the end of my fourth step, I realized I have never been faithful to any relationship in my life till I got married at the age of 38. This is the first relationship in my life that I have not cheated on. And that's what my ideal sex life, sex relationship was, what it turned out to be when I did that fourth step. Did I live up to that ideal till I got married? No. But that's what the ideal was. I grew towards it. And then the fourth and last part of the fourth step for me was, we have a list of people we have harmed by our conduct. Some of them came from my fear list. Some of them came from my resentment list. Some of them came from my sexual conduct list. But there were people who didn't land up on any of those lists. I was not angry at my grandmother, so she didn't make it on that list. I was not afraid of my grandmother, she didn't make it to that list. Thank God I never had sex with my grandmother, so she wasn't on that list. But I did steal her wedding jewelry and sell it. And I did lie to her. And I did do all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, which I owed amends for. And I think that was one of the best amends I ever made, and I'll talk about that when I get to that step. But those were the four inventories that I had to do. Sounds like a daunting task. Not really, you know, because if you look at the story of Earl T. in the Big Book, Dr. Bob took the guy through the steps in one afternoon. My experience has been in the last 22 years, if somebody comes in, you try and take them through the steps as quick as possible. You know, get them through it as quick as possible. Never mind if you don't have 500 names on the fourth step. You got 10 names. Let's start with that. I guarantee you more names are going to pop up as you live and as you start working with other people. But learn the process, get through the process, and live a life of recovery. So I did that again. I went back to my sponsor and I said, hey, I've done another fourth step. You know, lesson in humility. That man first sponsored me when he was 16. I went back with this new fourth step when he had 17 years sober. And he said, wow. And he let me sit down with him and show him how all these things were laid out in the Big Book. That's humility. You know, I don't have that kind of humility to let a newcomer tell me what he... I don't have that. And, you know, the defects that came up from this new fourth step, I just added on to the other list. And I continued this prayer. Very shortly, about 2 weeks after I had completed this fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh with my sponsor, I had a spiritual experience. Something happened which could not have happened without divine intervention. And I dropped the word if from my prayer and I came to believe. The willingness was turned to certainty and I did come to believe. It took another 2 or 3 years for me to get a more formalized concept of God, as I don't understand God, because you know what? If I was God, I should not be walking around free and clear right now. But so I don't understand Him. But that's been my experience on step 4, 5, 6, and 7. And I just want to thank the Lynbrook group for listening so patiently.